John.
We're live.
We're doing it live.
We're doing it live.
How was your weekend?
Oh, it was good. It was a good weekend. Progress has been made on my personal OKR of winning $20,000 this year playing poker. Other than that, it was chill. I actually worked some this weekend. Oh, I applied for a visa to go to India, which I have to get a visa to go to India. They asked some fun questions.
Because you're doing Laracon. We've talked about that.
Plug the thing. I'm doing Laracon India.
You're doing the full Laracon circuit.
Yeah, I'm doing a world tour. So as part of that, I need a visa to go to India. And I had to apply for a business visa, which I needed to use. Like, they sent me like a letter of invitation that's like a business inviting me to go do business things there.
Oh, interesting.
So anyway, I had to like fill out this whole form. But it's funny, there's like all these questions on there that's like, are either of your grandparents Pakistani nationals?
Wow.
If so, please explain.
Wow. What is there to explain?
I don't know what the explanation would be.
Like, I think it's a yes no question.
I have a dad and he has a dad.
Wow.
Yeah, but that's anyway, it was funny. So the first page of the website where you go to apply for a visa, there is a required field called, I forget what it is, but it's like, what type of visa are you applying for? And nothing renders on the page for that input, but it is required.
Hmm.
So you cannot submit the first form that you encounter. and what I realized was that there was like conditional rendering where, like, depending on what country you have selected for your passport, it only shows you the options that are available for your country.
Hmm.
But the that form field doesn't have a default value. So, like, by default, nothing is selected, which means by default, no options are showing, right?
Hmm.
And then once you select United States, then it'll show you the ones that are available for United States. But they aren't using, like, Livewire or anything where it's, like, the data is like actually linked to the value of the input. What they're doing is they have like a JavaScript click listener on the select box for United States. And I fill out forms using my keyboard. So I was just like tabbing through the input. So I had never actually clicked on it with my mouse, which meant that like it never fired the event listener that revealed the field that I needed to fill out.
Huh.
So anyway, long story short, I went into the CSS and changed stuff live about the fields so that I could see the options and selected them. And then only later when I was going back through to refill out the form again, did I realize that there was like an actual click handler that I had missed.
Hmm.
Anyway.
Boy, that's a yak shave going in and changing the CSS of somebody else's website to fill out a form.
A government website, yeah.
Yeah.
A foreign power.
Good. Sounds like a good use of time.
Yeah.
Nice. So you're going to India. You're going to complete the circuit. We've talked about the big one on here, right? We've talked about that already.
I don't know if we've talked on here, but I'm doing Laracon US.
Hey.
Hey, it's the big one.
This has been a long time coming for you.
It's been something I've wanted to do for a long time. I've probably applied to every one since 2017, maybe.
And my experience at the last one with you was like, you weren't at the speaker dinner, but like you might as well have been. Like you're buddy buddy with like every person who gave a talk.
I got a lot of friends in the circle.
Yeah. So that was like a funny thing to come into as an outsider. It was just like, you know, Daniel is already pals with all these people. So it's very cool that like you will be at the actual speaker dinner hanging out with Primogen and
oh my god,
all the dudes. Adam Wathen's gonna be back. It's gonna be very fun,
dude. Wathen's back.
Yeah,
it's the big dog.
Yeah, I'm afraid to listen to we did an interview at the Adam Levin, like, what, 7 years ago? No, it wouldn't have been that long. No, it would have been that long ago. Yeah, 7 years ago.
Yep.
And he had just written his ebook, and we talked to him about it. It's so funny how much things have changed since then, because that was pre-Tailwind.
Pre-Tailwind, yep.
Wow.
We talked to him. I think he was doing test-driven Laravel at the time.
And it was like, but he had like, he made the refactoring to collections and it popped off. And he was like, whoa, I just made a lot of money on an ebook. That's very cool. And so we talked
about it. I'm going to quit my job at Titan.
Yeah.
Freeing up a space for Daniel to get a job at Titan.
Yeah. And I was not a developer at all at the time. So I was like, sure, sounds interesting. I'm sure I'm too scared to listen back to it. I feel like it's going to be very embarrassing for me.
I'm sure we did a terrible job, but it was actually fine.
Yeah, exactly.
As with all things.
Right. You can only do the best you can do on that day.
Yep.
Yeah. That's funny. Good. I also gave a talk last week, which was very exciting.
Oh, yes. John, you did a talk. And let me tell you, I heard only positive things.
That's great. It's because, you know, nobody wants to share the... I actually specifically asked a lot of people in the room. I was like, hey, I'm like trying to become a better speaker. Can you give me your constructive feedback? And guess how many people did it?
None?
Zero. Oh. That's correct. Zero.
What they did is they gave me the constructive feedback for you.
Yeah. Are you going to share that with me now?
I think your star shone too bright and they were off put.
Yeah. Well.
No, everyone said incredibly nice things. I've heard from Dave Hicking and Chris Morrell that you did awesome. Someone else too, I forget who. And that you answered just an interminable number of questions. Like, it seems like it really like landed with the audience because like developers had lots of questions for you.
Yeah.
Which is how they express love.
Which is great. I love questions. And also some of them I was like, oh, that's a hard question. And I never appreciated before, right? When someone,
like what happens if no one runs for president?
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's like, it made me realize, it's like, you know, when speakers finish and then people just start asking questions, you're like, oh, Q&A, nice. They have the answers. And I was standing up there and I was like, do I have the answers? This is like,
what was the best
improvisational
question?
Well, a lot of people asked questions. There were two types of questions that were hard. So for context, the talk is all about, like, obviously I talk about this all the time on here. So like my whole shtick is like the full stack developer should be able to PM for themselves. There's all these like little tools and heuristics that product managers use, and you will be way more powerful if you use those tools, right? That's my thing. And there were two types of questions that were hard. One of them was like, what would you do in this situation? Or like, you know, like, well, if you have to like build big new features and also solve little annoying bugs for people, like how do you know how much of your sprint to dedicate to each, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I deferred too much, not deferred, hemmed and hawed, whatever, like non-answered. But I was like, with a lot of them, I was like, it honestly really depends. And like, if you as a developer don't know the answer to that question, you have every right to ask the people above you what the answer to that question is, you know? Mm-hmm. Because it comes down to like, what are we doing here? And Chris made a point of like, it's probably very different for InterNACHI, which is like decades old, and they don't have any like more like core functionality to build. The answer is probably very different for them than it is for like a brand new startup, right? A brand new startup should be building like big swing features for growth, or you know, to like prove out an MVP. And it's not so much about churn as it is like, let's find something really valuable here. So I was with a lot of those, is like, you know, for the question of like, what would you do here, or like, what about how much of the sprint should go to the, like, really tactical questions, I was like, my real answer, if I was working at your company, would be like, it depends. And if you don't have clear direction on that, I would go to the executives and be like, yo, what are we doing here? You know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, like the answer is like, well, that's the work. You know?
Right. Yeah.
Like it's not like I'm going to give you like five tips to avoid doing work. I'm giving you like a mechanism or like a shape within which to do work.
Yes. Yeah.
But there is work to be done there.
It made me realize that I think part of the thing, it got really clarified when I started doing stuff with InterNACHI, because I like hammered on this with Chris, because in that case I was working with the executive, right? Like Chris, the CEO. Mm-hmm. But I realized that one of the sort of parts of this that I have left a little bit unarticulated maybe is that like all of this really is downstream of goals, and you do like, it's very, you can't really make those judgment calls. Well, either you as a developer or a PM need to be empowered to make those judgment calls by yourself, or then that's usually not the case. Or mm-hmm. you need to be told pretty explicitly by the executives or whomever, like, here's what we're doing. Here's why, you know, here's the breakdown. Growth is more important than churn avoidance or whatever, you know, like you. And I think that's part of why goals are so important, is because like when people would ask those questions, I was like, well, I can't make that. I don't know in a vacuum. I need to know like, what is this company trying to do?
And like, if you are like, you want to talk about being a valuable employee, like if you're an employee who can like clarify the decision to that small of a decision, which is like growth versus churn avoidance, how important is each? This is the primary question, and based on this, we can go a lot of different directions. And like, you go put that in front of an executive. Like, that's what executives are supposed to be good at, is answering questions at that level.
Yes.
Right.
And so if you can go in and help provide that clarity, that's exactly what I basically brought it back around to that a bunch of times, where I was like, if you don't know, like, and you go in and ask these questions, I think if you ask it the right way, it's not like an annoying, pesky question. It's a question that demonstrates that you're thinking about the business and you're thinking about strategy. Yeah, you're thunking. You're out here thunking. And mm-hmm. you're not merely thinking, you're thunking. So I think that's actually really, and I was like, made this argument, it's like, I think that's actually really good for your career and good for your reputation. If you're out there being like, I'm building, but I recognize that like I'm an expensive resource here and I want to be working on the best and highest, most important problems. Therefore, like, I'm coming to you for clarity. Like, let's figure out a strategy for how I spend my time, because I want this business to succeed and I don't want to waste your money. Like that, mm-hmm. that bodes very well for you. You know, that's not mm-hmm. you being pesky or annoying. That's like you showing all the executives and managers like, hey, I take this whole thing really seriously. And I want the business to win, you know?
Mm-hmm. Here lies Daniel Colburn. He recognized that he was an expensive resource.
Yeah. And then
a life well lived.
The other hard question was, and this is one of the things that gives me like a little bit of dread about this whole topic. And I think it's the hardest thing about giving these talks, is that part of the assumption in everything I say about like, go talk to the executives about these problems, go get clarity, like, you know, try to say no to things that don't matter. The latent assumption in all of this is that you're allowed to do those things.
Right.
And that like you have managers who like listen to people, and that developers have some respect at your organization. And I recognize that in a great number of places, that's not true. And I'm like, mm-hmm. so I've started kind of jokingly, not jokingly, caveating a lot of this stuff with like, if you hear all of this and you're like, buddy, I'm not even allowed to do that, I don't have any advice for you other than like, try to work somewhere else, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like I can't, if your boss won't even hear you say these things, don't work there. But I also don't have any constructive advice for you, really. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's a hard one.
Yeah. Well, I mean, maybe like just hire a thunk to come in and tell your boss to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he'll listen to us because we're outside consultants. Right. Sometimes that works.
Yeah. 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 So that was interesting. Anyway, I'm rambling. It was very fun. The thing that I learned that I was very excited about is I feel very comfortable just talking in front of a group. And
I knew you would.
one thing it made me realize is like last week I did a call with Benty. It was the first big kickoff for this big project that I'm helping them to run. And like with the kickoff call was like, there was like a bunch of people, including executives and the CEO and a bunch of others. It was like more than 10 people. And I needed to like walk through this whole project. And I knew the document well because I had written it. So in a sense, I had prepared for it. But like, I didn't really prepare for it. And I just went in and was like totally comfortable. Just basically like talking for 30 minutes about what this project is. And it went really well. And I was like, you know, I think I need to lean on this more. Cause like I feel very, very comfortable just sort of like kind of flowing through that. And in the same way, like that's kind of what a 25 minute developer talk is.
Right.
And I think the blog posts have been very helpful for me to clarify my thinking. They're basically like almost like internal documents to help me understand what I think about this stuff. But once I have clarified that thinking, I think my actual medium that where I thrive is like standing up there and talking for 25 minutes.
Yeah. Well, I think like, you and I are both like, hey, if you have great comfort with the material, then like sort of pivoting around and riffing and stuff is like pretty easy, you know?
Right.
And like, I think that like manifests itself well in like sort of a big meeting or like something where you need to like set the direction, and like a talk is also like a great environment for that. I'm not like, when I give talks, I practice giving them, but I don't write every word, right? And at some point I do, but I actually delete all of it. And like by deleting all of it, it's like I like force myself to kind of like come up with what I'm going to say next and all of this stuff. So I have like a couple of bullet points in my speaker notes in case I like completely blank, but like I'm just need, like I need to get from here to here. Say whatever words feel right to get from here to here, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's right. And you're right that it's like, once you know the material, right?
Right. Yeah. You can't just get up there and say whatever.
Like, I could not get up there and like give you a detailed talk about a lot of things or almost anything, but like this particular thing I have thought so much about and written so much about that it's fine.
So there is a recording of this somewhere?
Yeah, it apparently it's coming out this week.
Hell yeah.
I don't know what the quality will be. It was a little mic kind of like 4 feet in front of me, and so I don't know what it'll sound like.
Okay, well, we'll see.
Yeah.
That's exciting though. I'm excited to hear it. So I heard like an early version of it, and like the Dave Hicking said that people really connected with the concept of gravity problems.
Oh, that's funny. I didn't make that one up, so that's good.
Yeah. So all of your original work was less exciting than the stuff you just blatantly stole. No, but he said people really connect with the concept of gravity problems. He said he was holding himself back from saying yes loudly a bunch of times. So that's good because I respect Dave.
Oh yeah, he's great. I like how much he cares, you know. He's fired up about this topic.
Dude, and it's all born out of pain.
Right. He seems like he's carrying some pain.
Bro, let me tell you, the amount of times that like I offloaded pain onto Dave, he's a real sin eater.
Yeah, I get that.
But yeah, it's good stuff.
Well, and I should also say thank you to Joe for putting the whole thing together. It was awesome. And like he organized a great event, and we're going to do more of them. I tweeted her this, but like meetups are so great and we should be doing more of them. And Chris, it was very funny because I didn't even know Chris was going to be there. And I didn't know that he was going to be talking. And
oh yeah, Chris gave a talk. How was Chris's talk?
So it was really funny because my talk like referenced stuff at InterNACHI. And I didn't even know he was going to be there or that he was going to be the other speaker. So it was very funny and sort of serendipitous. Chris's talk was outstanding. And we've just been, I feel like we've been gassing each other up a lot. It's getting a little like we've gone a little too far. We're after this week, we're going to stop gassing each other up. But I thought his talk was so great. He did a talk about contributing to open source. And the premise was basically like, I have made over 60 pull requests to Laravel, and like half of them got in, half of them got rejected. Some of them were like huge, you know, like massive 3,000 line things. Others of them tiny. Here's like everything I learned in 5 tips about, well, basically here's why you should contribute to open source, but then also here's 5 really practical tips about like how to make a great PR. And it was like, it was very fun. He did it as he did a lot of storytelling. It was fun and funny and practical and like made me want to do it. So mission accomplished.
Dan Sheets was always complaining about mail. Like he thought it was stupid that you can just make someone own something. By putting a stamp.
Sorry, you're
on
talking
it.
About like the U.S. Postal Service, like
yeah.
Okay.
He always thought it was like very dumb that you could just make anyone own anything.
Sure.
And so one time I like went on Amazon and just found like the most random assortment of things that I could buy.
Yeah.
And then just sent them to his office, like under care of you now own these things. I think I sent him like $45 worth of like potato peeler and like one glove and just like random shit. But anyway, all that to say, like sometimes I feel like that's how people treat open source projects. Like, hey, I'm going to make you own this code.
Yeah.
Now, like, what do you, so I think a lot of it's like, well, how to make your code something that someone else doesn't mind owning.
Interesting. Yeah. Yeah. I like that. Yeah. Well, it was very good. It was very fun. We had a great time. I met some very cool people and, yeah, I feel good about it and I want to do it again. If anyone listening here, I just want to practice it. I want to give more talks. So like, I don't know, even if anyone here is like, hey, come talk, just like do a Zoom meeting with the 3 developers at our company. I'm like, I'll probably do it. Just cause it sounds fun, you know?
Yeah. Well, and like, also, like, you know, there's the cool thing about you is like you can go into any dev or product or founder or, you know, indie startup conference. Like, you're so like not limited by like what sorts of conferences your talks can go at, right? Yeah. Like, you have a ton of flexibility. So, like, I think you could go give this talk a lot of places and it would be a big hit.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I'm going to start looking around for them. I have not done enough looking around for that.
There are websites. Actually, you know what? Titan made a website that lists all of them.
Oh, really?
I'll find it.
Cool. I was going to ask, I don't know if, so like we're just kind of shooting the shit here. There was one like mildly interesting topic I thought of, and we could maybe hit that quick, or if there's anything else you want to talk about, we can talk about that. But is there anything you wanted to hit on this?
Just one thing I forgot to say. So we have our internal like weekly check-in thing right before this. So we kind of ran through all the clients. One I forgot to mention on there is this guy who I consulted with for like 3 hours one time about event sourcing, and the answer was, this was pre-Verbs release, and the answer was like, it's not ready.
Yeah.
Like, he's not ready to do it the Spotsy way, and Verbs isn't ready for him to use it, right? Anyway, he came back around. We had like a 40-minute phone call on Friday where we just kind of like talked about some things. And it sounds like there's a decent chance that that will turn into like, in the short term, maybe a couple of mentoring call type things. And then he also coined the phrase thunk chunk, And he said, could I hire you guys for like a thunk chunk down
the
road?
Oh my gosh, dude. How have we not capitalized on this already?
So yeah, I don't know. I don't know exactly. We need to like make a pricing page so that we can tell you what a thunk chunk costs. But yeah, anyway, so that is also like a thing that I wanted to tell you about. And I guess I'll use the podcast as a way to do that.
Great. Excellent. Well, it's really funny because it actually, against all odds, fits kind of okay with the thing that I was going to bring up, which is, oh, so for one, we're swimming in it. We've got,
yeah. And by it, you mean work. The Skrilla.
Right. Well, work first, then Skrilla. and things, it's yeah, so we got a lot cooking. And
work first then Skrilla is a great Twitter bio.
So we have like a lot. We have already basically enough work for like 4.5 people that we're doing with 4 people, and then yeah, something else just came in, so we're like at probably at a point where we're gonna bring out another subcontractor most likely, which is exciting. The thing that I was thinking about bringing up was like a sort of it's not exactly, we wouldn't have thought of it as a sales strategy at first, but it has accidentally turned into a sales strategy. And I was curious if you wanted to talk about the coaching to client pipeline.
Oh, dude, it's unbeaten.
It's like the highest percentage thing ever.
Yeah. Dude, honestly,
do you want to describe it to the listener?
Yeah, I just would like to say, like, if we have any competitors out there, please don't do this.
Please don't do this. It's too good of an idea.
It's literally too good, and we can't stop making money from it. But yeah, so what we do is we do mentoring engagements with people. And so sometimes that's like, hey, like, let me just like chat with you a couple of times over the course of a couple of weeks and then give you some advice and then you'll go forth and do your thing. Sometimes that's like, hey, let's have a weekly call every week for 3.5 years, or 3 years, I think, in this case, because our longest running mentoring client just sent me an email yesterday saying he got approval from his boss for one developer day a week.
Which is also first client on the new pricing model.
In so doing, checked the box, completing the batting 1,000, turning mentoring clients into paid work clients.
Yeah.
So we now have 100% success rate with starting with mentoring and like casually getting into someone's business for an hour a week. And then eventually over time, they need something bigger and we're there and they already know how to pay us and they already trust us and we already have some context in their code base. And it's just like, who else are you going to hire to do this?
It's super interesting. And it made me even wonder, because this particular, well, actually really, I mean, all of them in some ways, their initial mentoring fee was substantially below what our actual hourly fee is.
Mm-hmm.
And I wondered, like, I'm like, oh, it's probably smart to keep that down there because it's like doing a couple mentoring things. It's like, it's not a huge burden for the company to take on a couple more mentoring right. things. And
like, it covers my salary for that time.
Right. Right. We're not
like,
losing
it's at least
money.
Break even.
Right.
You know?
So it's like, maybe we do even more of that and keep it at a relatively low price. And it's like, you know, and we can attest to, it's like, this is how I got into programming, was like you just doing code review for me every week. Right. Mm-hmm. And it's awesome. You did it for me for free, which is nice.
Well, I just really like having things that have 100% success rate. And right now we have two of them. which is that 100% of our former employers have employed us, yeah. and 100% of the people who let us into their code base for an hour a week have come back and bought more.
Yeah.
Right? It's like we have these 200% numbers that just speak to
us. And we can't create more former employers. So instead, right. we need more mentoring clients.
Right. So anyway, that's like a really good vibe. But yeah, I really enjoy it. I do think that like it's not important that it generate a lot of revenue, honestly.
Right.
Like and I think in all cases it's been like not a huge revenue driver for us. It's just been like, yeah, well, this is chill. It lets me have a relationship with this company. I get to make a friend.
Right. I've never heard you say like, oh no, I got to go to this thing that I'm dreading. It's like you're sitting there with Jade talking about code for an hour and like, it's a good time.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, it is like, the only thing is that it's like tiring to get deeply into someone's sure. problem quickly and then try and like provide a lot of value in an hour, knowing you're not going to see them again for a week.
Yeah.
Right. So like if my life was just made up of mentoring calls, I would be exhausted. But yeah. if you sprinkle five of them into a week, it's no big deal, you
yeah.
know?
Yeah.
And like, but yeah, so like just to like put like numbers on this, like we like these people were on what used to be my hourly rate of $100 an hour. And that was years old, right? Like that agreement was signed in like 2020 or 2021, I forget. We just looked at it and it was either a 3 or 4 year anniversary of us doing these calls.
Wow.
So yeah, that engagement was like very, very old. And so it was interesting because like I was like, well, we're going to give them a quote based on our current rate. And we even gave them like a little bit of a discount from the current rate. And yeah, like no shade, no lemonade. They just said like, okay, I've gotten approval for one developer day at that rate. And yeah. it went fine.
Yeah.
So like we were asking them to go up like a pretty like not double.
An amount like, that I was nervous. Like we're just going to send them the number and be like, I was like, I don't know what they're going to say to this if they're accustomed to the old number and they didn't mm-hmm. care.
Yeah. Well, I guess we don't know whether or not the CEO cared, but
well,
if he cared, none of that concern was passed on to us.
My feeling is, as always, like the way to know that you are on the edge of what's possible. If you're on the edge of the market, of what the market will allow, they're going to push back. And
right. yeah, yeah,
we have all, basically every client, every opportunity we've ever had to make a pitch, we've talked to each other beforehand and said, let's push it a little further. Let's push it a little further. And still no one has ever negotiated. Like, oh, that's not true. That's not exactly true. Some people have kind of negotiated, but like, generally speaking, like we're asking for more and people generally just go, okay.
Yeah. I think sometimes they do the due diligence of feigning concern before they agree.
Sure. Yeah. What is the thing? Like you're supposed to like press your hands into the table and say like, oh no, I can't. I couldn't possibly. Yeah, I don't know. It's like, my feeling is like, I do think like if somebody says yes without negotiating, we're not asking for enough.
Yeah. So there's a poker concept here, which is that like you, so when you on the river, which is the very end of a poker hand, right? Your last round of betting, when you are value betting, which means that you're betting, believing that you have the best hand, right? You're not bluffing. When you are value betting, you want to, so when you're value betting and they call and you get to showdown, you should have the best hand about 65% of the time.
Okay.
And if you have the best hand 100% of the time, you're not value betting enough.
Right. Okay. Right?
And so like the actual GTO, game theory optimal, the actual game theory optimal amount is about 65% success rate with your value bets getting called. So
that makes sense.
If you're value betting and not showing up with the second best hand at least 45% of the time.
Yeah.
Or sorry, 35% of the time, you are like undervaluing your hand and you're losing out on money. Right. And so that principle, I think, is like really meaningful in like pricing stuff where it's like, hey, if we are have 100% success rate of people just like saying yes to our number.
Right.
It's clearly not high enough.
Which I like, think like we're pretty close to.
Yeah. Like we should probably have like 35% of people talk us down to a lower number.
Yeah.
You know? So.
Yep.
Anyway. That's something to consider.
I love it. I don't have anything else meaningful. I could jabber all day, but I know we both have a lot of stuff to do.
Yep.
So.
We today have literally just launched the first Thunk client using verbs in production. Chris and Internachi also have launched verbs into production. So verbs is just out here swimming in production, dude.
I love it. I saw Chris at the event. You and Chris both helped to game test a new game concept I'm working on called Pork Barrel.
See how the sausage is made.
And it's on the landing page it says Pork Barrel. See how the sausage is made. I'm optimistic about this game. It's very fun, but it is a game that is fully verbified. Like every square inch of the game is verbs. We've been testing it, and Chris was like, "Oh yeah," he's like, "We launched verbs in Internachi, so it's live and it's the first live in production." And I was like, "If you don't count Pork Barrel, sure." And he was like, "I don't." I was like, "Okay." Thank you. I was like, "That's completely fair enough."
Yeah. Show me a user who's not me, and maybe I'll count.
I just wanted to be able to say I was the first, you know.
Yeah. Awesome. All right. Well, this has been great.
One last little thing that is it's not real yet, but friend of the show, Chris Thornton, who is helping me design Pork Barrel because he's a very talented game designer. He and I also started talking about another idea. And at some point he was like, how exactly does it work that like you set up a round in Pork Barrel? And I was like, aha, well, the code is very expressive and you will probably understand many parts of it as you read them. And I like started screen sharing and he was like, shit, I'm actually going to become a Laravel developer, aren't I? And he's on Windows. So I've been like telling him like, just wait for Herd to launch Windows and like you you can do that. And he like doesn't want to wait. He's like, he's thinking about just like figuring out how to set up his local environment without Herd.
Waiting into the deep end.
Nice. Yeah. I was like, good luck, buddy. But then he was watching a little bit of Jeffrey Way and he was like, models and views and controllers. And he was like, he sent me a message and he was like, can you tell me about what all the tables in Pork Barrel are like, what are all the tables like, how does our data exist? And I was like, aha, so you are still in spreadsheet land, much like I was. And the thing is, the little tables we make are not really going to be the source of truth about what's happening in this app. Instead, there's going to be a table called verbs events. Like, you're going to have to get into the deep end of a different thing, actually.
Yeah, dude, I'm so into it because like you and Jacob both like learned programming via event sourcing.
Yeah.
It'll be really interesting to have someone learn programming via verbs.
Right, right.
How crazy will that be?
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting. We'll see. He does. He's somebody who does get obsessed with a problem and get fixated on it for like years at a time. So I just told him, I was like, especially the fact that we can't probably help you with some Windows stuff. Like, it's going to be hard, but
I know we can't say the number here on the podcast, but like, do you have a sense of how much money you make doing what he's doing right now?
Oh, I don't know. I would imagine he would get a comparable or better number being a programmer.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm thinking.
Yeah. Right, not as cool. not as a junior. I'm sure.
Yeah.
He would need to be years in before he could start making more money.
Yeah. But I bet he could find a way to write code at his current job.
Yeah. And he's primed for it. He's a math guy. He's an actuary.
Wait, yeah, Aaron Francis, tell us what an actuary makes.
Yeah.
You know, right? That's a money thing.
Yeah. But it's funny because like he loves to play Factorio, and I'm like, just like get as interested in it as you are in Factorio, and you will.
Factorio is just programming.
You will get through. Yeah.
Factorio is just functional programming.
Yeah.
So Factorio is just refactoring to collections. Refactory to collections.
Okay, that's enough.
All right, we'll be seeing you, John.
Send me your file. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, bye.